This podcast is brought to you by Podcast Nation.
Anyone else feel like a business class required in your schooling curriculum would have been massively helpful? Because same. We went to school to become therapists, and here we are 10 years later, really noticing the void in our knowledge on the business side of therapy, which is why we love our Masterclass membership. Masterclass has truly increased our confidence in running our therapy practice, The Therapy Group. Pros like Chris Voss, Robin Roberts, Daniel Pink, and Mark Cuban have filled that void and taught us so much about decision-making, negotiating, maximizing our time, and effective communication. This year, you too can learn from the best to become your best with Masterclass. Don't just talk about improving, Masterclass actually helps you do it. Plus, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, so there's no risk. And right now, our listeners will get an additional 15% off an annual membership at masterclass.com/shrinkchicks. Get 15% off right now at masterclass.com/shrinkchicks. masterclass.com/shrinkchicks.
Welcome back to another episode of Shrink Chicks.
Take a seat on our virtual therapy couch and get ready to learn all about, well, you.
I'm Emily Beerley.
And I'm Jennifer Chaikin.
And we're both licensed marriage and family therapists and relationship experts. We're the owners and founders of The Therapy Group, a nationwide psychotherapy practice with down-to-earth therapists just like us.
Your session is starting, so get ready to know yourself and grow yourself.
Hey, Jen.
Hey, Em.
How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
You know, pretty well. It feels like it's been very busy, but good busy.
Good busy.
We've been very productive.
I always have more energy in the morning. I don't know about you.
Like, yeah, the morning is lovely.
When we record like afternoon, I am a dead person. I like pop out of bed
Well, we also both woke up and worked out and showered, and then it's like, all right, let's do it, baby.
Right. It just like gives you, do you pop out of bed in the morning? I guess you have a child, so this is maybe different.
No, I do. I do pop out of bed.
But
that has nothing to do with Millie. Before that, I popped out of bed.
I pop out of bed too.
We have a lot to talk about this episode today, so we have to get moving. But very quickly, Lisa Aston, what are you both looking forward to this spring? We have our open houses coming up. Once again, if you're any type of practitioner in the area, we're having an open house in Westchester and Philly. Reach out, contact at the therapy group or hello@shrinkchicks.com. And Nikki will make sure you're on the invite list. Come hang out with us.
You know what else I'm really excited about?
Tell me what else.
One of our clinicians, Taylor Nance, is hosting a boundaries workshop. And there is up to 10 spots in there. So people are currently enrolling in that.
Yeah.
So I'm really excited.
Don't you wish? Okay. So it's so cool. It's an 8-week program. You got to shout out Taylor. She has worked so hard on this. It's an 8-week program. And it actually tells you how the fuck to set boundaries, not what boundaries are. And I feel like when a lot of times the therapists talk about boundaries, they tell you what they are, but nobody tells you like how to actually do it.
Yeah.
This is actual skills. This is not, we're going to process and talk about it. This is like, I'm going to change your life stuff. So if you're interested in that, you should reach on out. There's 8 spots left. I think there's only 8 at this point.
Yeah. It's filling up quick.
But it's in our Philadelphia location. So you'd have to go to our Philly location, but that's it. So that's a great thing for spring. Those are all about work. Can you give me a personal one really fast?
Sunlight. That's my personal one is sunlight.
Okay. That's a really, really good one.
I mean, right? Every spring, I'm just pumped for the amount of sunlight that we're about to get.
Vitamin D.
It sucks the life out of me to not have sunlight.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. That's a really good answer.
Thank you. I mean, it's like my number one for the rest of time. What about you?
I guess if we're thinking weather related, I am excited for maybe the snow to melt eventually at my house and my dogs to stop bringing in piles of snow with me, with them. So that would be cool. But you know what? I would say right now, work, lots of stuff we're excited about. Personal, lots of stuff that's really excited about. Millie really wants to go to the Smoky Mountains this summer to go to Dollywood. So we're going to start planning that.
Are you going to bring Dolly?
No, she's insane. Dolly Parton. So if you don't know, I have a dog named Dolly Parton. She has a big chest and big hair. That is why we gave her that name. And Millie, my daughter, is in love with Dolly Parton, which is why we talk about her a lot. So hopefully we're going to go on down to Dollywood. If you've gone to the Smoky Mountains before and you've gone to Dollywood, can you message me and tell me what to do and give me your agenda?
Yes.
Thank you.
I think your Dolly Parton's going to be pissed. I'm just saying, but continue.
She's pissed about everything.
That's true. She's pissed anyway.
But listen, we only have, they don't give us hours and hours on this show. show, and we have talked about sex, and sex is a lot to talk about.
So much to talk about. We got so many questions.
We have so many questions. So you may know, Jen and I both have specializations in sex therapy. We do a lot of sex therapy with our work, but we don't talk as much about sex on the show because it doesn't seem to come up as much. We've had quite a few episodes about it, but I would say we talk about relationships. So let's talk really about sex today. And the number one question always, every single person will ask us, no matter what, is how to increase your libido. That is every question, right? Yes. As soon as someone advises why I don't want to have sex with my partner. So let's start out by saying, if you talk to a doctor, they're going to say, take this pill. If you talk to an Eastern medical practitioner, they'd say, like, take ginseng and maca and eat pineapple or whatever. But we are therapists. So we are going to say relationship with self and your partner is going to enhance libido. And let me explain to you what we mean by that. Starting off, if you have realized that you have a lower libido, I want you to look at the context of what's happening in your life currently. What is stress? What is happening in your home? What is happening in your relationship, right? All of these things affect our desire because everything happens within context. A lot of us, especially when you go through puberty and hormonal changes, you have something called spontaneous desire, which is kind of exactly what it sounds like. It's spontaneous. There's no rhyme or rhythm for why it happens, right? You're walking, you know, you'd like be in high school and you're like, look at someone, you're like, I'm horny.
Yes.
It's like you just get horny.
All the time.
Right? Like that. And it means like, it, you know, in school, guys just be getting boners. You're like, I just want to dry hump everyone. So that is what we mean by spontaneous desire. We do tend to see a decrease in spontaneous desire with women sometimes. I want to be very clear. One of the things I love, we've had Emily Nagowski on the show before, but Emily Nagowski's book, Come As You Are, is a life-changing book when it comes to women and sex. Because one of the things she talks about is everything is different, but everything is normal. So if you have the higher libido in your relationship, normal. If you have the lower libido in your relationship, normal. If you're a woman and have higher, normal. If you're a man and have higher, normal. So I think that so much we've been taught, men have the sex drive, women have none. Men have to coerce you into it, right? Like, and that's very purity culture and heteronormative.
Mm-hmm. I think a part of that too, right? Like when you put this pressure on yourself, when you're looking at what the quote unquote norms are, and you feel like, oh, I'm not fitting into this norm. There's a level of pressure that you put on yourself. And in turn, when you put that level of pressure on yourself, it can affect your libido. So it ends up being very cyclical in a lot of ways too. Rosie King writes a really good book called Good Love and Great Sex. And one of the things she says in it is that women experience 23 and a half hour foreplay, which means that everything that happens in a woman's day affects her capacity to experience desire and arousal, which I think is so true and like very poignant in a lot of ways, because the male sex drive, you know, it's more urgent, less distractible, more goal directed. And so I think a lot of the times too, you know, I know we're talking very specifically about, you know, heterosexual relationships, but if you're a female comparing yourself to your male partner, and you're like, well, their libido is much higher. I don't understand why I can't experience, you know, this spontaneous sexual desire like my partner does. You put this level of pressure on yourself that ends up further affecting your libido.
Mm-hmm. One of the reasons we're also talking a little bit more about heterosexual relationships is because the orgasm gap, which is the research that tells us that women in straight relationships have the least amount of orgasms, which is not, it's
fun,
not great.
Fun fact.
It's not good. It's not a good fact to know, right?
Really smacks you in the face with that one.
Yes. Same-sex relationships, much better sex. That tells you something interesting, doesn't it? Okay. So let's talk about this a little bit. Okay. So I talked about spontaneous desire. I'm going to talk to you about what most of us as we get older sort of experience a little bit more, which is responsive desire. So spontaneous, once again, is that thing exactly we talked about. It spontaneously happens. Responsive is a little bit more predictable, right? So touching yourself in a certain way is going to make me more aroused. As my partner too, this could trigger the aspect of libido. So the way that we talk about it is that arousal precedes desire. Most of the time we think, oh, I should just feel really turned on. But for most folks, they feel turned on after they have some type of arousal, right? So maybe that is, right? I mean, come on, we saw this years and years ago with 50 Shades of Grey.
Right.
All of a sudden, people will be reading and they're like, whoa, I feel something in my loins. Because you had some type of stimulation, right? So whether you're reading something, whether you're watching something, or whether you are enjoying and touching and having sex with yourself and masturbation or your partner, whatever that looks like. So arousal precedes desire. I want you to remember, if you are one of the people that you feel like you're struggling with your libido and desire, I want you to think about, where is arousal coming into this? If you are waiting to have desire to experience arousal, you could be waiting a while. And let me give you another example. Never in my life will I wake up and be like, I would love to work out today. It's like never, ever going to happen ever in my life. I don't like working out. It's not for me. But you want to know what? When I'm there, I actually really do like it. Afterwards, I'm really glad I did it. And so this example is, how did I make more of a routine and a ritual with exercise that made me feel good and that there wasn't pressure around? Because when we start to talk about this expectation with sex, expectation to have an orgasm, all this stuff, the way we said is you put the pussy or the penis on a pedestal. It's too much fucking pressure.
Yeah. Yeah. And when you put that level of pressure on yourself, what happens?
You don't want to do it.
You don't want to do it.
If so, I say to myself, I have to do this, I have to do this, I have to do this, I don't want to do it.
Right. And I love what you said about a routine. And because I wonder if people are listening and they're hearing the word routine and they're like, oof, that like does not sound sexy. And the fact of the matter, it isn't. And I think there's
but most things about being an adult are actually not sexy though, right?
But I think there's always this comparison to the beginning of a relationship of like, why don't I have this desire in the way that I once did at the beginning of the relationship? And the fact of the matter is it's not the beginning of the relationship anymore.
Yeah. Or why doesn't my partner, right? There was quite a lot of people that wrote in about feeling rejected by their partner's lack of libido. And this is really tough, especially for those of us who were socialized and raised as women, that we are, and you're in a heterosexual relationship, you were told that men want to have sex with you all the time. And you've been sold this very incorrect myth that makes you feel like, well, then I must be the problem. It sort of messes with us. Libido can ebb and flow, and gender really doesn't affect this at all.
If you listen to one of our latest episodes titled Em and Jen Fall Apart, you know the current feelings of burnout that we're both facing. Running our business, the therapy group, keeping up with the podcast, and enduring a house renovation leaves little time for grocery shopping, meal prepping, and cooking. So we are extremely thankful for our sponsor, Hungry Root. When I received my first delivery of the Hungry Root box, it felt like a breath of fresh air. Hungry Root saves me so much time and offers customizable options. Plus, with perfectly portioned ingredients, I'm wasting far less food than I would if I were left to my own devices in the kitchen. No more throwing away wilted veggies or expired condiments lurking in the back of my fridge. Each order is fully customizable, so you can take their suggestions or choose anything you want. They've got fresh produce, high quality meat and seafood, smoothies, sweets, ready to eat meals, kids' snacks and meals, vitamins and supplements, and much more. I discovered Three Little Pigs, spinach, feta, and egg bites in my last delivery, and they are my new obsession. Also, Hungry Root's coconut curry sauce is not to be missed. Everything from Hungry Root follows a simple standard. It's got to taste good, be quick to make, and contain whole trusted ingredients. Right now, Hungry Root is offering Shrink Chicks listeners 40% off your first delivery and free veggies for life. Just go to hungryroot.com/shrinkchicks to get 40% off your first delivery and get your free veggies. That's hungryroot.com/shrinkchicks. Don't forget to use our link so they know we sent you. Can you believe we're on year 5 of Shrink Chicks? We have been podcasting since 2019 and have somehow yet to change the photo of us on the cover of the podcast. We are planning a photo shoot in a few weeks so we can finally update our cover art. We both obviously need new outfits for the photo shoot, but really didn't want to break the bank. So thank goodness for Quince, where we can get multiple high-quality outfits for a very reasonable price. Quince is here to transform the way you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach. For the shoot, we want to go with a few different looks, one being monochrome, so I opted for a few key items from Quince's collection, including their Mongolian cashmere tee, classic trouser pant, and structured blazer. I couldn't resist adding their timeless 14-karat gold jewelry pieces to complete my look, because who doesn't love accessorizing? The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes, making me feel even better about my purchases. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/shrinkchicks for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/shrinkchicks to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/shrinkchicks.
So one, I have a few questions. If you're struggling with talking about sex in your relationship, or you're struggling bringing this up to your partner, I want to know, one, how are you talking about it? And how do those conversations go? So as therapists, we talk about process versus content. You never have sex with me, or you never want to have sex, or what is about me? As opposed to, hey, I've noticed we have been having sex less in our relationship. Is there anything going on? What can we do to work on this? Curiosity, not judgment.
It opens up the conversation. I think the reason why sometimes we approach it in that way, right, is that it feels so personal, right? We take it really personal when our partner has a lower libido.
Why do we do that?
I think because it's such an intimate experience that we're having, and sex is, you know, the reason we have sex, there's so many reasons we can have sex that isn't just pleasure, right? So connection, stress release, like there's so many, we feel closer to our partner. There's so many reasons, and it's such a vulnerable experience. And so if you're someone who has the higher libido in the relationship, your partner has a lower libido, because in reality, you will most likely never match up in your libido. It's pretty impossible. And so for when your partner has a lower libido over and over and over again, I think we want to protect ourselves from the possibility that it's us, right? And so we come at it very defensively, and it starts to infuse a level of anxiety in the conversation around sex, as opposed to looking at it as, okay, wait, what if this is not about me, right? What if my partner had a really stressful day, they're going through a lot at work, you know, like something's happening with their family, like what if those things are affecting their libido and it's not necessarily about me? Because when we approach it and come at it as, this has to be personal, this has to be something about me, then we come at the conversation, once again, it is infused with a level of anxiety. It starts to, you know, suck out your ability to communicate about sex in your relationship.
You know, it's interesting, guys, thinking about, and an activity someone could do when they're listening to this is like, I want you to think about what was the most satisfying sex you've had and what's the least satisfying. Because it's funny when you were talking about, right, like the reasons we have sex is like, I was thinking about when I was going through fertility stuff, procreation, war sex.
Can't even imagine. Sounds rough.
Is taking Clomid, which made me like the most unstable I think I've ever been in my life.
I saw you go somewhere else in your mind while I was saying that.
I was like, man, like having sex for procreation was so unsexy.
Yeah.
And like, you know, we give this advice sometimes to people of like, oh, well, can you make it fun? Can you make it playful? God, sometimes it's just like, bleh. And so it's hard. So then like during that time, I was so resentful because I was being so disappointed by sex. It was so hard to want to have it.
Yeah.
It was on a schedule. You know what I mean? Because also like before, there's like all this stuff when you're trying really hard to get pregnant. You're like, okay, well, we can't have sex these days up until, because you want him to keep his sperm. Like, it was such a wild thing.
Yeah.
And the least sexy thing I could ever imagine. Yeah. But I want you to think about the most satisfying sex you've ever had. What was happening for you?
Yeah.
What was the context? What were you wearing? What were you smelling? What was going on in your relationship? Right. Like, and it doesn't have to just be with the partner you're with now. I'm asking the most satisfying sex you've ever had. And then you can also think about the most satisfying sex I've had in my relationship.
Yeah. And I like what you're saying about the context of it, to think about too, if we're talking about how, you know, specifically for women, if they experience 23 and a half hour foreplay, like what was going on in that day, right? Like, was it, you know, was there less chores to do? Was there less on your mind? Like, was the mental load low? You know, like really want you to think about like what space you were in mentally, because it really does affect how present we can be in sex, how much is going on for us, right? I mean, you hear all the time, while women are having sex, they're going through this checklist of like, there's so many things I have to get done, right? I'm just thinking about
some women,
I have to check this off. I have to check this off. And they talk about sex as this is just another thing I'm checking off.
Yeah. And I think it's hard. And I mean, so much of this is also affected. Once again, we're therapists, so we have to talk about this. How was I raised talking about sex? What was modeled to me? If you grew up in an environment where there was religious trauma, there was a tremendous amount of purity culture, sex is a very complex thing for you, possibly.
Yeah.
And I think also when you're sold this idea, especially I've worked with so many folks that decided to not have sex until marriage. And there was so much buildup. And then honestly, sort of disappointing.
Yeah.
And part of that is because if you think about the sex you were having at the beginning of you starting to have sex, it's like not that good. Right?
No.
Like nope. You're like, is it over? Did it happen? Did it go in? I don't know. Right? So it doesn't matter the age that you start doing this stuff. It's normal for it to take time and for you and whoever your partner is to start to learn each other's bodies. But there's a few things I want you to keep in mind. Do you like the sex you're having? If I have, right? People have used the description of Chef Boyardee before. If I have Chef Boyardee ravioli, I'm like fine with not having ravioli, right? If I have like some like amazing, authentic, best ravioli of my life, I'm going to crave that fucking ravioli. They're both the same food. But I want you to think about, am I really feeling satisfied with the sexual activity that we are doing? Or is there a lot of pressure? And is there enough non-penetrative sexual activity that's happening with that as well, right? Because if there's so much pressure around penetration, then there might be other stuff you really enjoy that really turns you on that's getting ignored, like dry humping. I'm going to go back to dry humping. Listen, I will go this to the grave. We are...
Take dry humping to the grave.
Oh, God, it makes me think of Saltburn, right?
I know, same. Immediate picture.
Immediately. Now we can't ever talk about graves and dry humping again.
Okay. I'm going to be honest, too. And, like, I hate to shit on your example. Like, I fucking love Chef Boyardee.
Okay, it was just... Okay.
But listen, to each his own, right? I mean, if we make that connection... What?
Everything is different, but everything's normal.
Everything's normal.
You love Chef Boyardee. Okay, I'm going to be totally honest with you. I've never had it.
Oh, okay. Well, listen.
So I'm just saying.
Next week when I see you is your lucky day, because I'm about to bring you some Chef Boyardee.
You know, it's funny. I actually have to cancel that meeting.
Oh.
Suddenly, I can't go.
Okay. Never mind. I didn't realize the like aversion that you would have.
Okay. So let's talk about aversion.
Yes.
Well, this, you know, great segue. Yes.
Well, because also, you know, something I was thinking about while you were talking about sex for procreation is when you are doing that over and over and over again in your relationship and you transition out of that and you're trying to, you know, create a sexual relationship that isn't about procreation.
Mm-hmm.
How much?
Really hard.
Yeah. Because how much of that carries over?
A lot.
Yeah.
I mean, so let's talk about that. Somebody had asked in a really, really amazing question. How do you stop your past hurts from your spouse from affecting your sex drive? So I think it goes back to this thing, is that anything can affect desire and sex drive. I don't like using the word sex drive. I don't know why. It just feels, I don't like it. So just so you know, I won't use that word again. But your sexual interest, I guess that I'll say. Resentment kills sex drive. And the thing is that I had a lot of resentment going through fertility treatment and it wasn't actually about my partner. I was resentful towards other people because I was very jealous. So I was so angry and so upset. And also, I was on a lot of fucking hormones. And so afterwards, I was like, I don't want to have sex with you ever. Like, I was so upset by the whole thing. And also, It took us so long to get pregnant. I was finally pregnant. And then I was really scared to have sex because I was really worried about miscarrying.
Yeah.
And that's something that I go through. And then like, it is perfectly, as long as a doctor says so, and you're not for any reason, like on pelvic rest, it is perfectly safe to have sex while being pregnant. But if you have experience with miscarriages or fertility, it's really common to feel like very nervous around that.
Yeah.
So the question this person said is, let's remember, it kills sexual interest.
Yeah.
And so how do you deal with the past emotional damage? Are you dealing with the relational issues in your relationship that's impacting your sex life? Because a lot of times people will be like, oh, it's just our sex life that's the problem. I'm like, you think?
Because the lack of I almost use the word sex drive, so I apologize. The lack of libido.
You can love the word. I don't know why I don't like it. Yes.
Thank you. But the lack of sex drive, the lack of libido that you have is almost like a symptom for the rest of the relationship, or can be a symptom. I shouldn't say always. It can be a symptom for the rest of the relationship. And that's what we're saying, is that it's easier to see the lack of sex in the relationship mm-hmm. than to see your resentment at times. Mm-hmm. Right. And so yeah. I think it might be important to look at, well, what is the resentment? How do I bring this up? How do we communicate about this? Because it clearly is affecting maybe the safety that you feel in feeling close to your partner. And once again, sex is such a vulnerable, connected experience, or can be such a vulnerable, connected experience. And it might be hard to allow yourself to open up in that way if you're feeling this level of resentment.
One of my favorite things that what happens in couples therapy is a couple comes in and one person has all the stuff and the other person just says, well, if our sex life was better.
Yeah.
That's all I care about. And I'm like, oh, man. And sometimes if someone is only worried about their sex life, it also might tell you that that's the only way they're able to connect.
Yeah.
So if that's the one way that you have been taught connection, or that you feel close to your partner, when they have this, you know, what you feel like, God, like he just wants to have sex all the time, that might be the only way that they're really comfortable connecting. And so for you, you're thinking about like, oh, it's so annoying. They always want to have sex. That might be them really trying to connect with you.
Yeah.
And that's what we mean about understanding. If I study you and I study me, then I can understand us.
Anyone else go through soap and cleaning products insanely quick? At both my house and at our business, we're constantly replacing plastic bottles. Did you know that an estimated 5 billion plastic hand soap and cleaning bottles are thrown away each year? And if that's not bad enough, most cleaning formulas are 90% water, which is heavy to ship, leading to excessive carbon emissions. That's why we are thrilled to introduce our newest sponsor, Blue Land. Blue Land is on a mission to eliminate single-use plastic by reinventing cleaning essentials to be better for you and the planet with the same powerful clean you're used to. The idea is simple. They offer refillable cleaning products with a beautifully cohesive design that looks great on your counter. Fill your reusable bottles with water, drop in the tablets, and wait for them to dissolve. You will never have to grab bulky cleaning supplies on your grocery run. Refills start at just $2.25. You can even set up a subscription or buy in bulk for an additional savings. From cleaning sprays to hand soap, toilet bowl cleaner, and laundry tablets, all Blue Land products are made with clean ingredients you can feel good about. And I'll be honest, I was a bit skeptical at first. Can eco-friendly products really tackle tough messes? Well, Blue Land proved me wrong. The products I received, like their multi-service cleaner and bathroom cleaner, were powerful. Grime, grease, and dirt don't stand a chance. Blue Land is not only good for the planet, but also for your wallet. And the starter kit I received was beautifully packaged. The bottles are sleek and sturdy, and the scents are amazing. Lemongrass, lavender eucalyptus, and fresh lemon. Or you can choose fragrance-free. Blue Land has a special offer for listeners. Right now, get 15% off your first order by going to blueland.com/shrinkchicks. You won't want to miss this. blueland.com/shrinkchicks for 15% off. That's blueland.com/shrinkchicks to get 15% off.
There's been studies, they talk about how women need to feel emotionally connected in order to feel sexually connected, and men need to feel sexually connected in order to feel emotionally connected.
Once again, this is why there's an orgasm gap in straight relationships.
So I think that once again, we're talking specifically about heterosexual relationships, that like when women may see their male partner wanting sex, right? They're less likely to view it as a bid for connection,
mm-hmm.
right? Because women want to connect through emotional, you know, like this, like emotional connection. And so you're less likely to view that need for sexual connection as, oh, this is, you want to be connected to me. And so it throws us into kind of this, you know, negative interaction cycle where neither partner is getting their needs met. And so the key there is like, how do we communicate about that? How do we bring that kind of cycle to the surface? And then mm-hmm. how do we communicate about that?
And so I think that like one of the things also is like people are always going to say like, well, like talking about sex isn't sexy. We know. None of this is sexy. I can't get not. But the nice thing is once you've communicated about it, it can be sexy because you're on the same page, right? So once we've understood here, a lot of people say like, oh, I don't know how to ask for sex that's not in a rejecting way, right? Like I'm worried about asking for sex. I've gotten rejected so many times. I've worked with couples that have figured out ways to ask each other that feels safer in nonverbal ways, right? So maybe that we've used the example before, we have a sex candle. One person lights the candle, it means they're interested, and the other person gets to keep it lit or blow it out. And once you have talked about this and figured out what works for your relationship, it doesn't have to be this clinical conversation.
Yeah.
I would say you're also sharing parts of what you want sexually with your partner. If you are spending, one of the things people ask about is like, well, is it wrong if I'm masturbating in my relationship? Masturbation is never wrong. Let me be clear. But I would say if you're only masturbating and not having sex with your partner, what's that about?
Mm.
So I would want information about it. But like I'm super pro masturbation and sex with self. I think it's great. It's really important. It helps you learn a ton about your body. But I'm wondering, when are you communicating? If you learn about your body during masturbation, do you communicate that back to your partner or partners? And are you sharing with them or are you just keeping it really private? And what's that about for you?
The other piece, you know, I think it might be important to bring up is like how, when we aren't interested in sex, how we communicate that to our partner. Because that's another thing that we work with a lot in couples therapy is how do you communicate this in a way that is less rejecting and doesn't, and is less likely for your partner to personalize it.
Yeah.
So that you can say like, listen, this is not about you. I've had a really stressful day. I'm really tired. I'm very attracted to you, right? Like there are ways to communicate that to your partner and to talk about how can I let you down in a way where you don't personalize it? Like, I know that that's hard, but I think it's an important conversation to have because one partner's libido is so much higher than the other. The rejecting, once again, I'm doing this in air quotes, partner, may have more of a defensive response, like pushing them off or shutting them down or making some snide remark. And that gets so quickly infused in your relationship and just builds over time. And what happens too is that then affection falls out of the relationship because we look at affection as, oh, this is a bid for sex.
Mm-hmm.
And because the affection feels like a bid for sex, we shut all of that down. And then affection falls out of the relationship, right? Like hugs, kisses. And so even just taking sex off the table to start to reinfuse affection into the relationship to understand this doesn't have to turn into sex, right? Mm-hmm. Like kissing, hugging, touching, all of those things don't have to turn into sex, but it's also important in order for you to feel physically connected to your partner. So that's another thing to think about, because that's something we see all the time is that when there's a partner's libido is lower, they also reject any bids for affection.
Yeah.
And that can be really hurtful for the relationship too.
So let's talk about that for a minute, right? Let's go a little deeper with that, because so many people wrote in about, I have a higher libido than my husband. And there's a lot of people, I think here's the thing. We have such an expectation for what we think men should do with sex.
Yeah.
And we have been sold such an incorrect idea about sex and sexuality. But I think men have also been sold this, and so that they can feel a ton of shame.
Yes.
And I think with shame means avoidance. And so it's harder to have these conversations. And it might be harder to bring it up. So I would say to you, How do you talk about hard stuff in your relationship? This is another hard thing that just happens in relationships, and that is okay. How do you and your partner talk about hard shit?
Mm-hmm. And it's not, I think sex is probably one of the most, sex and money, difficult topics to talk about.
I would throw it in-laws.
In in-laws? Sex, right? Money, in-laws. Yes, yes.
I would throw in-laws in there, and I would say that would be my trifecta.
Yes.
That I would talk about.
The difficult,
I don't know what the research is,
combo
on that.
Trifecta.
We might be wrong. We're just saying from lived experience, okay?
Right, right. I wouldn't disagree with that. Can I ask you a question?
Mm-hmm.
Keeping your sex drive after having a kid.
Yeah, this is a fucking shit show, man.
Yeah. I had
to be. Okay. Once again, we talk about sometimes sex is not sexy. You have a child, trial goes down, you have to pump afterwards, got to freeze the bottle, got to get it ready for the next day. You're fucking tired. You don't know if that kid's going to wake up. None of that shit is sexy. One of the things I like to prepare couples for, and this is why having pre-conversations are helpful, is absolutely, almost, I would say 95% guarantee, if you're one of those 5% that this doesn't happen to, fuck yeah, enjoy your life. Once again, not everything applies to everyone. Don't make this about you. But if you're those other 95% of people, your sex life is going to get hit after becoming parents. And talking about that beforehand, how are we going to handle this? And here's the thing, you can have those pre-talks, and the pre-talks are very important, but nothing, you cannot prepare yourself for the actual level of exhaustion that having a child is. No matter how much, I do this shit as a living, I worked with a million moms, and then I became one, and I was like, oh, that was funny that I thought I could help people, but I didn't know. Like, it was so bad. And so I think it's hard. This also means, what happens if you have a child who has disabilities, who has colic, who has allergies? It can affect everything. So the question is, this is when we talk about what's the support we have and what's the stress reduction we have. Do I have enough support in my life? Do other people take my kids from me for the night? Do I go to a hotel for the night? Am I able to, even for some folks, they have to find that it's better to have sex in the guest room away from the monitor. Am I willing to put the baby monitor away when we have sex? And what is it? There's also so much we can't talk about sex and confidence without talking about body image. There is a large body image transition that can happen, sometimes positive, sometimes negative, sometimes neutral, after having a child. And so I think you also have to look about, like, what's happening for me. Lots of folks also end up on SSRIs after having kids. SSRIs can absolutely impact your libido. So one of the things to keep in mind is, hey, I know that it's harder for me to have spontaneous desire. I know that it is harder for me to orgasm. So one of a few things. Why is it so important for us to orgasm? It's a goal-oriented idea. And for some of us, if you're on meds that make it truly, truly difficult to orgasm, you might have to say, what other sexual things do I find really pleasurable that aren't necessarily having an orgasm? But it's true. Your sex life will change after having kids. Some people I've heard change for the better. They're even more attracted to their partner. I will say that, like, 2 days after I had Millie, I was so attracted to Aaron, seeing him step up in this way. And then it went downhill really fast, because after, like, the first...
The shame you couldn't, like, use that, you know, at the time.
It went down really fast, because then, like, you know, like, when you first have a kid, they're kind of like these potatoes and they don't really do much.
Yeah.
So you're kind of like, this is so easy. And then, like, a week later, like, wah! They woke up. Really slaps you in the face. But it's also, I was really lucky. I had a good birth. I didn't experience birth trauma. I wasn't healing from a C-section. Everyone, I didn't have tearing, right? Like, it is really different for everyone's experience.
Yeah.
So everything's different and everything's normal.
Someone, I think this is interesting because, you know, I just want to tackle it, and I wonder if other people are thinking it. What could I expect from my therapist if I bring up my lack of romantic attraction? I assume, like, sexual desire, mm-hmm, or attraction in the relationship. Every therapist is different in terms of how comfortable they feel talking about sex.
And we want to be clear, we think this is fucked up. Yeah. Every therapist should be, sex is a part of life.
Yeah.
We live in a very puritanical culture. The fact that sex therapy is not taught as part of every graduate program, specifically couples therapists, I cannot believe that this is not like
shocking.
Shocking, right? The same way that like mental health should be taught in teaching classes.
Absolutely.
I mean, there's just so much shit, right? So we want to sit here and say your therapist is going to be amazing about it. And yet we have worked with lots of clients that say my therapist wouldn't work with me about sex.
Yeah.
They referred me to someone else.
And that's why I think it's important to ask them and say, like, is this a topic that
this
you talk
house.
About? Is this something you're comfortable with? Because it might be the case that there are certain therapists that are really helpful for certain areas of your life. And then other areas, maybe they don't have the expertise in, or there's less, you know, comfortability there. And so you're very much allowed to ask them. And I know that's hard, right? If you get a response of, yeah, I'm not comfortable talking about that, or that's not an expertise of mine, you know, it can be scary to be like, okay, maybe I have to develop a different relationship with another therapist who maybe has more comfortability around this. But you can have a very open and honest conversation with your therapist about how they feel talking about sex. It needs to be communicated so that, because once again, sex is such a vulnerable it's such a vulnerable thing. It's such a vulnerable conversation. And so for you to feel like you have that safety in therapy is really important. Someone else asked us another question. Let me see if I can find it.
It was like, I'm worried about how to bring up my sexuality.
Sexuality in therapy.
Right. So, hey, I find myself avoiding this topic. I want to talk about exploring my sexuality and I'm really nervous to bring it up.
Yep.
That's it. And then let them take from there.
Yep.
The hardest part, rip off the band-aid. Just say it.
Yeah.
All right, dear Em and Jen.
Oh, let's do it.
Dear Em and Jen, how do I communicate better with my husband? We have 3 kids and our extracurriculars are insanely busy, so I'm usually doing that. But then I come home to no supper. Or when I ask him to help with the kids, I don't usually get a positive response. I've asked him to do stuff, but is usually received with annoyance or their concern or why I actually need his help. We don't get home till around 6, sometimes 7, and we're all exhausted. I've stopped asking for help as I'm receiving such a negative response. He likes to work in the shop and can get carried away doing so, and guys love to interrupt his day for a beer or 7. Every time I ask him to help me, I feel like I'm nagging, but like no one tells me to make supper. It's 5 o'clock. We all have to eat. No one tells me to get to town and run the kids to do things, and that I'm the default parent, stay at home mom, and I'm feeling burnt the fuck out. How can I communicate more effectively with him? On a side note, he has ADHD, and that alone comes with a whole new ball of communication issues, check-ins, and alcoholism and forgetfulness. Thank you so much.
Mm.
You want a hugger?
So bad.
So bad.
I also think a lot of people might relate to this. You know, I think that this is a very relatable thing to feel. There's a level of almost invisible burden of being the default parent. Things you think about, things you take on. And it's hard. You know, my first thought, which I don't even think is helpful, is how helpful couples therapy would be, you know? And
yeah,
that's
I don't know if this person, yeah,
right.
if he's interested.
That's what I'm saying is like, I know that that's not helpful.
Yeah. Here's what I would say. What's your boundary? What's your bottom line? If he never changes, if this never changes, what does that mean for you? What do you have to change? It might have to be my kids are in less activities.
Yeah.
If this is going to happen. I want your husband to wake the fuck up and
yeah.
see how much you're doing. I would like to come to your house and tell him that. But if it doesn't change, what does this mean for you? What is your bottom line? And if the bottom line is this is unsustainable, I have to leave, then that's what you're going to have to say. If this doesn't change, here's what I'm going to have to do. Nobody wants to get divorced. Nobody wants to separate, right? Like nobody wants to be like, I want to like, you know, have my kids have in 2 different houses unless it's bad enough. So the question is there, and what would it be to say to him? Listen, if you're going to go out, you're going to tinker in the shop, that's one thing, but here is exactly what I need.
Yeah.
Maybe you're going to have to meal prep on Sunday with me together.
I also wonder how much have you communicated what's underneath these needs? Right? Like the feeling of being burnout, the feeling of feeling alone, feeling lonely, feeling overwhelmed. Sometimes we, instead of communicating that, we say like, can you do this? Can you do this? Can you do this? Whereas for you to be able to say, listen, I am feeling so alone. I'm feeling so overwhelmed. I really need help. Can we have a conversation about what that looks like? Because this isn't sustainable for me. I'm really struggling. Mm-hmm. And that's why I say, like, I would hope that opening that door for that level of communication, that your partner could hear you the more you say that. And then, you know, if they are able to hear you, great. And then you could come up, you could work towards a solution. If they're not able to hear you and you're communicating this over and over, I'm really lonely, I'm really struggling, I really need help. Let's mm-hmm. talk about what we can do together. And then there's no response to that. I think then that's another conversation of,
yeah,
once again, where's my bottom line here?
And the question is, relationships only change when it gets bad enough, unfortunately. Yeah. In some ways, this setup might work for him.
Sure it does.
Right? I mean, I don't know. I love the idea of just like tinkering in a shop, having a beer or seven,
right,
fucking around
great.
My friend. Right. Yeah. Like, I don't know. It sounds kind of great. So like, what's the motivation for them to change? It's going to have to come from you. And that sucks. It sucks that you're going to have to be the bigger person. So for this person, we love you. We're thinking of you. We want to give you a big hug.
Yes. Thank you so much for tuning into today's episode of Shrink Chicks.
We'll see you back here next Monday for another session.
In the meantime, if you want a question answered or a topic discussed, follow us on Instagram at Shrink Chicks. And if you're looking to get connected with a therapist like us to start or continue your therapeutic journey, visit thetherapygroup.com. Just fill out a contact form on our website and we will personally match you with one of our amazing therapists.
Also, if you'd be so kind, we'd love a rating review and for you to share with a friend or an enemy or a mother-in-law. Honestly, whoever needs it, so that we can keep reaching more people on our mission to bring mental health topics to your ears every week.
Thanks for being here with us. And don't forget to grow yourself. You gotta know yourself.